Hello, everyone. So this morning, we are looking at Proverbs chapter 10. And Robin mentioned it last week, but you'll notice something changes in the book of Proverbs here. The first 9 chapters are longer conversations about wisdom, but from chapter 10 onwards, it's much more like a collection of short, rapid-fire observations. One proverb talks about our speech, the next about work, and so on. It jumps around very quickly. And it means if I try and work through every verse in this book this morning, you'll be shouting at me about your car parking running out. So instead, we're going to do 2 things. First, we're going to zoom in. And as I've been reading this passage, there are a few specific proverbs I felt God highlight to me, or ones that I think summarize the key themes of the chapter concisely. We'll look at those individual proverbs and ask ourselves, what do they teach us about living wisely? And then we're going to zoom out, and we'll ask, what is Proverbs teaching us as a whole? How does this chapter fit into the rest of the book and into the rest of the Bible? So begin now by reading Proverbs 10. The Proverbs of Solomon. A wise son brings joy to his father, but a foolish son brings grief to his mother. Ill-gotten treasures have no lasting value, but righteousness delivers from death. The Lord does not let the righteous go hungry, but he thwarts the craving of the wicked. Lazy hands make for poverty, but diligent hands bring wealth. He who gathers crops in summer is a prudent son, but he who sleeps during harvest is a disgraceful son. Blessings crown the head of the righteous, but violence overwhelms the mouth of the wicked. The name of the righteous is used in blessings, but the name of the wicked will rot. The wise in heart accept commands, but a chattering fool comes to ruin. Whoever walks in integrity walks securely, but whoever takes crooked paths will be found out. Whoever winks maliciously causes grief, and a chattering fool comes to ruin. The mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life, but the mouth of the wicked conceals violence. Hatred stirs up conflict, but love covers over all wrongs. Wisdom is found on the lips of the discerning, but a rod is for the back of the one who has no sense. The wise store up knowledge, but the mouth of a fool invites ruin. The wealth of the rich is their fortified city, but poverty is the ruin of the poor. The wages of the righteous is life, but the earnings of the wicked are sin and death. Whoever heeds discipline shows the way to life, but whoever ignores correction leads others astray. Whoever conceals hatred with lying lips and spreads slander is a fool. Sin is not ended by multiplying words, but the prudent hold their tongues. The tongue of the righteous is choice silver, but the heart of the wicked is of little value. The lips of the righteous nourish many, but fools die for lack of sense. The blessing of the Lord brings wealth without painful toil for it. A fool finds pleasure in wicked schemes, but a person of understanding delights in wisdom. What the wicked dread will overtake them, what the righteous desire will be granted. When the storm has swept by, the wicked are gone, but the righteous stand firm forever. As vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so are sluggards to those who send them. The fear of the Lord adds length to life, but the years of the wicked are cut short. The prospect of the righteous is joy, but the hopes of the wicked come to nothing. The way of the Lord is a refuge for the blameless, but it is the ruin of those who do evil. The righteous will never be uprooted, but the wicked will not remain in the land. From the mouth of the righteous comes the fruit of wisdom, but a perverse tongue will be silenced. The lips of the righteous know what finds favor, but the mouth of the wicked only what is perverse. And so, as we read that passage, perhaps some of you are already thinking, I'm not sure that sounds like real life. I know people who are wicked, ignore God, cut corners, and still seem to be doing very well. Yet I know lovely, kind-hearted people who are struggling. And that's an interesting observation, and one I am going to come back to later on. But to set up today's message, the question I'd like us all to keep asking here is what does it look like to live wisely? As part of that, I'll cover what I mean by wisdom. What does it look like to speak wisely? What does it look like to work wisely? What does wisdom look like when outcomes don't make sense? And so with that question in mind, let's explore Proverbs chapter 10 together. As part of living wisely, what exactly is wisdom? Proverbs has already told us where wisdom begins. In Robin's sermon last week, Proverbs 9:10 says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom." In other words, wisdom begins by recognizing that God is God and we are not. It's trusting his wisdom above our own. And I'm going to return to this thought too. But with that foundation in place, chapter 10 begins to show us what that wisdom looks like in everyday life. I think one thing that is always true, wisdom is being teachable. Verse 17 says, "Whoever heeds discipline shows the way to life, but whoever ignores correction leads others astray." You know, wisdom and teachability is learning from others or learning from our own mistakes, heeding that discipline, accepting that correction. It points us in the right direction and helps us live out life as God intended. Sometimes we mistakenly think wisdom is knowledge or intelligence. But the Proverbs don't say blessed is the highest IQ or the most qualified. Sometimes, you know, we can know lots of facts about the Bible. We can understand it very well, and we know what the wise thing is to do, yet we do the foolish one. And sometimes we equate wisdom with age. It's not automatically true. Age can bring experience that points us more clearly towards the wise decisions. But age can also bring many years of making the same mistakes and being stuck in my ways or too old to change. Now, I call this out up front. Wisdom is teachability, not necessarily age, as I want all of us to engage in this however you see yourself. If you consider yourself young, then wisdom isn't something you need to wait for. It's not something that automatically drip feeds into you over time. God sets out all the ingredients and examples we need to be wise. And engaging with those, you can have wisdom beyond your years. Or maybe you consider yourselves of a wise vintage. Don't simply rest on your own experience or knowledge. And real wisdom is knowing that life is a learning curve that we're all on and we're never designed to finish. I'll move on to the first facet of today's question. What does it look like to live wisely? Let's begin with our speech. One of the things you may have noticed from Proverbs 10 is just how often it comes back to our words. Again and again, Solomon talks about mouths, lips, tongues, words, lies, blessings, slander. It is one of the dominant themes of the chapter. Verse 21 says, "The lips of the righteous nourish many, but fools die for lack of sense." So our words can nourish people. They can strengthen someone who's exhausted. They can encourage someone who's doubting themselves. They can embolden someone who's feeling hopeless. And Solomon uses another image just a few verses earlier. In 11, he says, "The mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life, but the mouth of the wicked conceals violence." The more poetic amongst us will have already seen the metaphor of our righteous words being life-giving food and drink for others. Those who know my wife Rachel and I will be aware that I'm British and she's American. And we have a long-running observation about some of the differences between our cultures. Mass generalization, of course, and Americans, very welcome in the room. But in many aspects, we think that American culture can be prone to doing things to excess or pushing things to the extreme. Whereas British culture is prone to being a little bit suboptimal and a little bit too constrained. We often joke there's a perfect middle ground that we call the Bermuda solution. You know, a bit more than the Brits would normally do and a little bit less than the Americans would normally do. And you've arrived at the optimal point. Do you know, I think encouragement is one thing that fits this. Americans, in my experience, are incredibly encouraging. When I visit the USA, people I meet there will tell me, I love your accent, you're awesome, you're rocking it, dude. I've always enjoyed the attention, and I've grown to quite like the positivity. But sometimes they'll be throwing out encouragement, and I'm skeptical. I'm thinking, you barely know me. There's no way that this can be entirely genuine. And we call it marshmallow strokes. Nice things to say, but not a lot of substance. But if I think about British culture, and if I look hard enough at myself, sometimes my first thought, or the first thing on my tongue, is a witty retort, something that's mildly insulting and lighthearted banter with the boys. If I'm honest, there have been so many times where an encouraging word would have been really impactful and meaningful, yet I've opted for a joke or just stayed silent for fear of being cringe or over the top. Rachel and I, learning from one another, we think that ultimately Brits could be a bit bolder and take more opportunities to encourage one another. And Americans, I love all the positivity, but in a British setting, please also understand the power of describing something as decent or not bad at all. I'm well aware that a lot of the Americans I know from the evening gathering aren't here today. It's quite a partisan crowd. Maybe you relate to this story, or maybe I've insulted your sense of British pride. But to bring it back to the proverb, the lips of the righteous nourish many. When I was reflecting on things I've been taught about speaking wisely, both inside and outside of the church, I think the lessons have tended to be on what not to say. The Proverbs have been taught as, once you've said something, you can't take it back. Hold your tongue, as hurtful words have consequences. Count to 10 before you respond in anger. Now, all of those are true. But do we just focus on avoiding the foolish or wicked half of these Proverbs and not enough time proactively pursuing the righteous half of these Proverbs? I don't want the takeaway today to be, how can I avoid saying foolish things, as true as that may be. Instead, I want your lasting thought to be, am I taking opportunities to nourish people with my words? We can avoid foolishness by not saying the things we shouldn't, but speaking wisely is also knowing when to encourage someone else and how to call out the gifts that God has given them. The next aspect of living wisely is, what does it look like to work wisely? Let's zoom in on verse 5. It says, he who gathers crops in summer is a prudent son, but he who sleeps during harvest is a disgraceful son. Here, two things stand out to me. It is specifically during the summer harvest, and then it contrasts working, he who gathers crops, and resting, he who sleeps. Potential misconception here. This proverb is not just saying work harder, it's saying work wiser. It's highlighting that work is important, there is a time to work, and it is prudent to work hard when it is time to work hard. However, I don't see it as diminishing the need for sleep or rest. There's a time to work and there's a time to rest, and it is saying that wisdom is making sure your actions match the moment. The description of harvest is an indication of that. My grandparents were farmers. I grew up on their farm when I was little, and I know others here who will also be aware of the farming calendar. Without doubt, harvest is the most important time of the year. If the harvest is ready, that's a key moment. It's not a time to stay in bed, because the harvest won't wait and the opportunity passes. And additionally, harvest time is outside of our control. It's weather dependent. Over the last year, my community have been reading Garden City by John Mark Comer. He looks back at the Garden of Eden and how God gave Adam and Eve the gift of cultivating and working that land. He says they weren't dropped into some a manicured botanical garden to have lunchtime picnics, afternoon snoozes, and drinking Pimm's in the evening. Work wasn't some kind of suffering that followed their sin. It was part of God's original intention that we were created to work. Now, if you've ever read anything by John Mark Comer, then you'll also be sure he'll mention the Sabbath somewhere in this book, his day of rest. And I love the way he discusses the Sabbath. He tears up the legalism, the rules of what you can and can't do, yet he deeply acknowledges that we were also created to rest, as God did. And he condenses everything the Bible says about the Sabbath, how God rested, how we're designed to rest, into two applicable questions. When thinking about his day of rest, he considers each activity and asks, is this life-giving to me? Is this worship? Honestly, it's a great book, and if you want to think more about what it looks like to work wisely, then I'd recommend it. I've also included working wisely in the sermon today because it's already something that God has been speaking to me about. The book helped me realize that I was starting to fall into a disjointed, unwise working cycle. And for me personally, it was especially true when I worked from home. I'd get distracted too much during working hours, so I didn't get everything done. So I'd end up working late into the evenings or working a little bit on the weekends to get things finished, which meant I didn't rest when I should have been resting. And I'd end the week that bit more weary and disjointed. So I'd limp through Monday morning and start really slowly, and so the cycle continued. Maybe some of you also have deadline orientated on your LinkedIn profile and can relate to what I've said. How I'd work to procrastinate rest and rest to procrastinate work. But instead, working wisely is getting the moment right. Beyond our work, what about our faith and our involvement in church? As a simple example, I'm an evening gathering boy, and at the end of the service, we were asked if we can stack chairs and set the room up for the cafe on Monday. It is the only thing asked of us as members of the congregation at that service. Yet, if I'm honest, do I chat away after the service to someone I end up chatting to in the pub afterwards anyway? And do I sleep through the harvest? Or another potential example, if the church was running an alpha course and asked members of the congregation to help out, do we sleep through that harvest? I spoke earlier about how the harvest time is dictated by the weather and is outside of our control, and it's also a key moment to get right. Now, if we equate God to the weather in this metaphor, are we attuned to what he wants us to do in a particular season? And are we willing to let him disrupt our own schedule? Or do we pass on the opportunity and say, sorry, God, it's a bit inconvenient these weeks, but if you'd have scheduled it next month instead? Ultimately, I see this proverb as saying, work hard when it's time to work, but I also know it's important to rest when it's time to rest, and living wisely involves having that balance, identifying the right moments, and being attuned to how God wants to lead us in that. And you know, as I was reading this passage, it's in verse 30, it said, the righteous will never be uprooted, but the wicked will not remain in the land. And I felt God share a direct word for someone here today. I felt God say there's someone who finds himself in quite a difficult environment. I think it's work, not maybe like a social circle, where key individuals in power or the crowd around you are doing the wrong thing and you're concerned about the ethics of it. I felt God say that he has placed you where you are, that the opposition you're encountering will not uproot you, that you are his righteous voice in that place. I also felt God say he's not going to keep you there permanently. The time will come when he replants you elsewhere, but he will not allow you to be prematurely uprooted by evil. So please have hope that God has placed you where you are. Feel his favor because your righteous heart is a purpose behind why I put you there. And you can trust God with what comes next. And if you feel that was a specific word God was saying to you, there, then please feel free to come and find me afterwards during ministry time, and I'd love to pray for you. We zoomed in on a few individual proverbs there. But we shouldn't read proverbs like a collection of fortune cookies or little sayings on a fridge magnet positioned just above one with live, laugh, love. So let's zoom out. What can we learn about living wisely by taking a broader look at this chapter? As I read that chapter, it's obvious the proverbs are very contrasting. Wise this, foolish that, or righteous this, wicked that. On one hand, that style can be quite thought-provoking. It cuts through the shades of gray and encourages us to ask, am I taking path A or path B with my life? On the other hand, it can read as quite binary, particularly when we look at the outcomes for the righteous and the wicked. Right at the start, I said some of you might be thinking, I'm not sure this sounds like real life. I know people who are wicked, ignore God, cut corners, and still seem to be doing very well. Yet I know lovely, kind-hearted people who are struggling. Oh. Missed a slide. Wisdom is trusting God with the outcomes. At the start of the series, Max likened Proverbs to an IKEA manual for wisdom. Let's stick with that for a second. The Creator God, who designed the furniture, has given us a manual for how to build it, and that is Proverbs. But for those of us who have built flat-pack furniture before, you'll know that sometimes there are missing parts or something has arrived damaged. You follow the instructions, but it doesn't hang together correctly, and it's an acknowledgement we live in a broken world where sin impacts us and others in this metaphor. I think Proverbs is a description of how God's world normally works. But elsewhere in the book of Job, it shows us that righteous sometimes suffer for reasons we don't understand or that we cannot see. The book of Ecclesiastes shows us that sometimes life appears frustratingly unfair. And that's where wisdom is trusting God with the outcomes. Wisdom is also trusting God with the timing. The proverb does not say the wicked will suffer immediately, nor does it promise the righteous will prosper by next Tuesday. God's clock is often different from ours. Sometimes justice arrives instantaneously. Watch some instant karma videos on YouTube. Sometimes justice arrives years later. Maybe we see the wicked thwarted in courts of law. Sometimes the righteous have to wait until they're in heaven to prosper. It is trusting God with the timing of those outcomes. And outcomes aren't something we can control. They're something God can control. Justice isn't something we alone can deliver, but God is the ultimate judge who delivers justice. And living wisely is knowing that we're not God, that God is God, and trusting him with both the outcomes and the timing. Wisdom is trusting in God's wisdom rather than our own experience. But we probably shouldn't be surprised when we see outcomes that don't seem to make sense. If anyone should have experienced the life and outcomes that Proverbs describes, it was Jesus. He was perfectly wise. He always spoke words that gave life. He worked faithfully. He trusted his Father completely. He was the truly wise son who brought joy to his father. Yet what happened to him through his life? There were times he suffered, he was rejected, he was mocked, he was crucified. And for Jesus, though, the outcome of Proverbs have ultimately materialized. As one example, verse 7 says, the name of the righteous is used in blessings. So today's question has been, what does it look like to live wisely? It looks like being teachable. Are we humble? Do we heed discipline? It looks like speaking words that nourish. Are our words nourishing others? Do we take the opportunities to encourage others? It looks like working to God's rhythms. How do you balance your work and rest? Do you get the moments for each rite? Do you allow God to direct you, even if it disrupts your schedule? It looks like being faithful where God has planted us. It looks like trusting in God's deep wisdom, not our own, even when life doesn't seem to reward wisdom immediately, because God's timing is bigger than ours. And we can know that Jesus has already walked this path before us. You know, Jesus was the righteous one who suffered the fate of the wicked so that we, the wicked, could be considered righteous. And because of that, we can trust that the wisdom of living God's way is never misplaced. So as I invite the band up to continue with the service, I've left those questions on screen as things to consider or take away in, for you personally, what does it look like to live wisely? Thank you.